VC is very biased. It's usually a lot of men investing in men and kind of in that say in the same types of products and startups. And so they, and founders, exactly. And they said, okay, and usually Tomiko themselves, they only invest at Series A. And they said, okay, how do we get into startups earlier? How do we find the right talent earlier? And also in something different.
This is Female Business Angel Podcast,
your go-to destination if you're a business angel or would like to get into angel investing and don't know where to start.
Or if you just want to find out how we tick. We're Tina and Katja, both business angels from Berlin. Well, I'm a VC now. We will interview established female business angels about how they got started and how it is going, including all the best tips and tricks.
So get ready for some insider stories and personal empowering moments and revelations with these incredible women.
Welcome to this journey with us.
Hi, Janie. Super good to have you here at this beautiful scene studio in our rooftop podcast place.
Yeah, thanks so much, Katja. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, finally. So I think you are one of the last female business angels that has to come to our podcast. So finally it happened. And super happy it worked out that spontaneously. So please introduce yourself. I think it's very exciting how you juggle being an entrepreneur, running your own successful startup, and being an angel investor. And also we bump into each other at all these events. So how do you do all these things, and how do you stay sane and focused?
So first of all, I'm Jenny. I'm the co-founder of April. April is a startup that pretty much delivers fertility and family-forming benefits. So that's when your employer is paying for things like egg freezing, IVF, but also adoption, surrogacy, not only for women, but also for men, to make it as inclusive as possible. And next to this, I'm also angel investing, mostly through the Atomico Angel Program. I joined that program 1.5 years ago, and it's super nice because it gives me pretty much a little bit of money that I can invest in the startups that I think, will be the most successful, create value, and also support the things that I believe in.
Yes, tell us more. How did you get into the angel program? How did you start? They chose you. You chose them.
I know. I mean, I get this question a lot, and I think for me, when I started my own company at the end of 2019, I also realized that, a lot of angel investors invested in my company. And I was really surprised, or kind of like realized that's kind of how it works. You don't have to invest crazy amounts. And I realized I also wanted to give something back. I still had a little bit of money that I made from my previous company that then IPO'd. And so I started initially investing with my private money, really small amounts through a syndicate here in Berlin. After two investments, for some reason, I was in Portugal for the New Year's Eve pretty much. And I think on the 5th or 6th of January, I suddenly received an email from Atomico saying hey, have you heard of this program that we're doing? And would you like to join? And I was like, I don't know what my heart did, but it's my face, I was just crazy. It's they asked me and I had no idea why. And I think that's a little bit the funny thing, because a lot of people ask me how do you get, or did you get into this program? Is there an application process or anything? And there's not. It's a little bit, I guess, random. And I think the way the Atomico program was designed is that it's supposed to, that they saw back in the days, VC is very biased. It's usually a lot of men investing in men and kind of in that say in the same types of products and startups.
And so they... And founders,
yeah. Exactly. And they said, okay, and usually Tomiko themselves, they only invest at Series A. And they said, okay, how do we get into startups earlier? How do we find the right talent earlier? And also in something different. And we probably need people that come from a different background and that have different views. And so they usually, when you look at the people that are in that program, it's like super broad and it's a variety of people from like really people that work in NGOs, soccer players, and like really, really broad. Of course, also people from the startup scene. And I think for me, it's because, I mean, I started April back then and it was all about diversity and inclusion. I think, you know, for them, it kind of was a good match. So that's kind of how I got in. Usually the program is only 1 year and you get like $100,000 to invest. For me, that program was just extended with a bunch of other people that also extended the program. And yeah, so right now
I'm... Second year in,
and yeah. I really enjoy it.
That's why I had no idea there are also NGO people and soccer players. So talking about bias, I mostly know women like yourself running a startup or working for an early stage startup as an operator of a unicorn who are members of Atomico program, like, you know, some ladies from the UK and from Holland as well. So
no, it is, I mean, yeah. Of course there are people that are from the ecosystem, but then there are again also people that have a completely different background, and I think that's what makes the whole program so exciting. And they're still experimenting with this as well, right? Like in the first years it was more like a almost like a class, like a batch, and we all started at the same time, and now they're experimenting and saying like, okay, we leave it open because like over the course of the year, we just meet people and we just bring them in as we meet them. So that's also the new.
Yeah, so it's not like the 1 year. Yeah, that's Sophia Benz set it up, right? Back
exactly.
In the days, and now it's being iterated.
Yeah, exactly. She used to work at Atomico, and now she's at Cherry Ventures, but still I think it's her heritage.
Your baby.
Yeah.
And do you meet other angels? Do you have like a virtual huddle or like get togethers or something? Or is it more of a like Slack channel? And so
I think, I mean, Atomico, they are based in the UK. So a lot of the activities are in the UK and they're in their office in London. But we have a lot of like, I mean, the program started when there was still a pandemic. So we have a lot of video conferences together. I mean, that's what I mean with like, for me, it was more like it started with a class. Mm-hmm. So of course I met a lot of the people like virtually in the beginning. We have a Slack channel where we share deal flow, where people share like their investments and in general, just like questions, right? It's also a learning opportunity for everyone who's joining the program. Of course, I was not an expert. I'm still not. But it's really nice to have these experts and kind of say like, you know, how do you look at the term sheet and how do you evaluate actually like a company? Is the valuation too high or too low? Or like, how do you do this? And I think this was super good to get started in the beginning. Last year over Christmas, I met most of the Angel Program participants in person. And that was really nice as well.
IRL gathering. It's really cool. And how did it change your perspective as a founder on angel investing? Because you're on both sides of the table. So
yeah, and that's for me personally, it's the coolest experience because it's also a bit weird because I'm so early in my own kind of startup experience, right? We just raised seed. And before, like when I started the program, we were still a pre-seed company. And then looking at other like founders and pitch decks and realizing, and I'm like, okay, I'm supposed to give you like a valuation or to invest in you and kind of give you advice, but I'm still like in that same position. And it was a little bit weird. And I don't know, I was in the beginning, I thought like, okay, who am I that I can judge you? But I think it turned out that it's actually, for me, it was a really nice learning experience to see other people's pitch decks and to realize that I, you know, can be bolder in what I say. And I think it's also seeing, because like in the moment I was announced as part of this program, like I got like a shitload of pitch decks everywhere. And it's like you automatically have a lot of deal flow, of course, from a lot of men as well. And I still appreciate that. But for me, because I set my investment thesis from the beginning, it took a while to think about what I actually wanted to do. But I say like, I usually invest in startups with at least one female founder or one founder from an underrepresented group. And usually from like, you know, my experience comes from like B2B sales, kind of fintech as well. And now more like health tech. So I usually say like, in a way, it should be something that makes the world a better place in one way or the other. And so I have usually, I kind of pushback on a lot of the pitch decks, but it's really nice to see like how bold people are and like how crazy like they sell their stories. And I think this was super important for me, and I also share this usually with my co-founder Toby, for us as a learning experience to see like how do other people kind of position themselves. And it's really strong, and sometimes especially we as women need to be bolder on these things.
It's like about this storytelling and self-confidence, and probably also giving you a feeling being like eye to eye with other entrepreneurs and other investors. It's you try to get your business off the ground, so it's I think it's really interesting to start as an angel and then as a founder, and at the same time, because also like being a founder, there are sprints where you just can't get back with your feedback to, you know, other entrepreneurs pitching to you. So it just can be overwhelming. So find it like with my personal experience. So I have to deprioritize like certain things, or your business partners also kind of ask you, okay, what's your focus? How can you juggle that many things? And so how do you prioritize that? Is it also like time frame wise or?
Yeah. And then, I mean, for me, it's a bit like, you know, for when you're, I really enjoy doing this. And when you have a passion project, you always find time for something you really enjoy. Mm. And so in the first year, it was a little bit easier for me to navigate this. I feel like now, like that we raised our own seed round and like we're hiring more people and a lot is going on. It's like a lot of people heard that for me in the last few months. It's like I had to say like, sorry, I need a break at the moment because I have to focus on my own company because that's my priority number one. And so I'm right now trying to kind of really not take too many meetings, don't meet anyone for coffee, because I really want to focus. Because I really, if I invest in a company, I also want to provide them with like time and my attention. And I feel like I just don't want to invest money because I think that's really not it. But at the moment, I feel like I don't really have the time. So I kind of push back a little bit. So it's all about like, you know, what's important, what personally is important for you. But I really enjoy it. So I definitely want to make more time for it again. And I already have like some investments in the pipeline right now, so I'm not too worried, because it's also I need to spend the money as well within that year. But yeah, it is work. It's additional work, and I do this in the evenings or on the weekends usually, kind of like going through this. But again, it's also, you know, when you're, I mean, you know this yourself, it's like once you're part of that ecosystem, automatically you also meet a lot of people and you also get excited about people, and it's a natural thing. But I think the one thing I had to learn is to how to say no, and how to kind of also say like, okay, now is not the time for
set
me.
Boundaries.
Yeah, exactly.
And so tell us more about your very, very first angel investment. What was it and how did it happen? And also how did your investment thesis or focus maybe changed over the course of time, because you've learned a lot, so you have different perspectives, you've done some investments now, so you look differently at the founders and at the pitch decks.
Do you want to like the first private angel investment or through Atomico?
I don't know, whatever is the better fit like for this story, you know, for the whatever you want to review.
No, because I think that it's a little bit different, because like my very first angel investment was a company that is doing a kind of a B2B marketplace for recycled plastic. And it's, I got in it through, because I mean, Atlantic Labs was my own pre-seed investor, and someone from the Atlantic Labs kind of ecosystem started their own syndicate. Max Bader, not sure if you know him, and he pretty much approached me and said like, Jenny, I'm doing this, are you actually interested in angel investing? And I always knew I wanted to do this, I want to give something back. And he kind of told me about that one startup, and I was like, I mean, the founder is a surfer, we're talking about recycled plastic in the ocean, I'm a surfer. So for me it was like, wow, this is something that's really close to my heart, and I really believe that something needs to change there. And so for me, that was like the first, I mean, it was a nice thing. I knew, I think my first investment was like 5,000 euros. So very small amount, because I was very careful. I'm like, okay, am I just throwing money away right now or not? But I felt like once I did it, it felt really nice. And I knew, okay, I'm probably not going to see it again for the next, I don't know, few years.
Or maybe never.
Or maybe never. No. But it doesn't matter because it feels right to do this. And so this was kind of my entry point. And then so my tickets became a little bit bigger. And then when the Atomico program started, that was really funny because I'm in this fertility space, and I met Caroline Bitterdorfer from Levy Health. And in the beginning, because we were still kind of almost like, she just started the company and I met with her a few times and I thought, wow, she's really good. She's also doing something in the fertility space. I'm like a little bit worried. She could be really strong competition. And it was like,
You are in the same space.
Like, yeah, but in the beginning we were like more because we were a B2C startup as well.
Okay,
and she also started a B2C startup. And I was like, ooh, this could be dangerous for us because I think she's really, really smart and really, really, really good. And when the Atomico program started and I knew we pivoted anyway to a little bit of a different space, I thought, okay, I actually want to invest because when I'm scared of her, I think she's really good and I think I should invest. And so this was like my first, before the program was even announced, I already kind of committed to invest
of
in her.
A spy strategy. As
yeah. Well. It sounds now like spy, but like I think for both of us, it's actually a really good move because it's really complementary.
And you can drive the space.
Exactly, together. And I think also from her side, she's very... she always says, like, even if we're competition, like, everyone out there, we at least need to talk with each other and look each other into the eye. And right now, it's just, like, really, I'm so glad that I did it because, I mean, she is great, the company is great, and it also kind of helps us to kind of really understand the industry.
Yeah, and I think it's never, like, the winner takes it all. So, and I think this is the, like, really booming space that there can be, like, enough players that, you know, the cake is big enough for everyone.
Yeah, but it's also, it's like, you know, for me, the feeling was, like, if I'm scared of someone, I mean, she must be really good. Like, you know, it's like this, and for me, it's more like also in general when I do angel investments, and I think that's for everyone. In the beginning, it's not so important if the business model is perfect. For me, it's really about like, do I believe in the person and is the industry interesting? And do I believe that the person, even though I don't know if the business model that is on the pitch deck is the perfect just yet, can they figure it out on the way in the next 2, 3, 5 years? And I think this is like, if I have this feeling that they're going to figure it out, then I'm learning.
How do you find it out? Is it just feeling, gut feeling? Or do you ask around? Do you ask some questions?
So for me, it's a lot about gut feeling. And I try not to be too dependent on others. Of course, there are topics where I have no clue, where I kind of send this over to an expert and say like, what do you think? But what I hate myself when angels do this is like, if the round is like 80% full, then come back to me and I'm investing. And I'm like, I don't want to be like that. If I have an opinion, if I'm convinced, I'm doing it, no matter who is joining or not. And I think this is a little bit, I'm trying to focus really on my gut feeling. And if I don't have this like 100% hell yes kind of feeling, I'm not going
to
do it.
Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to be like first money in. As an angel investor, you're supposed to come into the round even before the VCs come in and bring the VCs along or like make the case.
So
that's why you pitch to the angels. So,
and I think that's also what you need in the beginning. You need people that are your champions, that believe in you. Because I know this myself, like I have these people and this is like so important in the beginning. It's like a little bit... Sometimes it's a little bit therapy session and kind of coaching session. It's just like someone that gives you a pep talk and kind of like keep pushing.
Yeah, you have great angels. Yeah.
And so I think that's important and that's kind of also what I try to give back.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, I think it's, you're on a great journey and with your business and supporting other entrepreneurs. We always ask this question, if you could change one thing in this world, on this planet, it could be plastic in the ocean, gender equality, I don't know, something bigger. What would it be?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. There's so many things. And I think, I mean, this is like close to my heart, of course. This diversity and inclusion topic is really, really close to my heart. I mean, that's what we do with April, because we believe that everyone should have the same chance to start a family. And it's all about like opening up and not sticking to this, like, okay, we grew up believing that a child needs to have a mother and a father and they all need to be married. And that's kind of...
And they have to be 27 years old.
Okay. And I think like the world is changing and like there's so much more like there's so many more options and kind of there is more color in like how families are built. And I think this is super exciting. And I wish like this change would happen much faster, especially here in Europe. We're very behind in our thinking, even though we're so open on some things. And then there's still these like things that are so deeply ingrained in our like thinking processes. Yeah. But that's what I'd
love
to
How is it? And I mean, you're probably from the liberal family, but how is it in your own environment? Because you're like what you're doing is it's like a very bold change of the future of like questioning the current status quo. It's for like fertility treatments for women. It's not, I think we've talked about that. It's not like very easy. It's also like hormone therapy. And so what is the reaction you're getting from your environment?
I mean, I personally grew up in a very traditional kind of environment, happy, like mother, father, child kind of set up. But I think for me, it's because I lived in also in the US, saw a lot of things, traveled a lot. And I think suddenly you realize that, you know, it's, you know, we all have our biases. I still have them as well. And it's just about like realizing that it's just something in your head and it's a barrier in your head. And I think this is something, you know, also when I explained this to my parents, right, back in the days when I said like, look, I'm starting a company, it's about egg freezing and IVF. And they're like, what? Okay, what? Like, what the fuck? But I think when I explained it to them, like, why I believe this, I think they're also, I mean, it took a while, right? I don't expect anyone to immediately change their mind, but it's like, it's a journey, and it's important that you start somewhere. And it usually it takes them like half a year for them to really realize yeah, that's actually cool. Like, why shouldn't like a same-sex couple have like a child? It's super nice. Why shouldn't you have a child when you're single? And so kind of to accepting this and to see this. And of course, I think when you live in a city like Berlin or like London or whatever, you're just also more exposed to this. So it's a bit easier for us to accept this. But I think that's why we need to push this more and give more people a chance so more people see it. And I think that's how the loop is closed.
Yes, actually, my 6-year-old daughter, they all want to marry the same boy from the kindergarten. And now they're starting school. And but the boy doesn't want to marry them. He doesn't want to marry like none of these girls. So she's asking me, okay, can I marry a girl? I was like, yes, of course you can. And can I have a child with a girl? Yes, you will need like a donor from sperm, but you can. It's like, oh, okay, interesting. And yeah, in Berlin, like they are being confronted with that. We also had like another girl approaching us at the playground. I was having a business meeting with a friend of mine, with a girl, and she said, okay, are you her mother? So like, no, we are like actually talking business here, but we are more of like boring family, kind of more traditional. Oh, but I have two mothers and we're like a rainbow house. It's like, this is great.
That's cool. Beautiful, right? And I think this shouldn't be seen as something, oh, that's crazy or that's so special, because it should be normal. And I'm pretty sure it's gonna happen in the next few years, and it's gonna be so much more normalized.
Like step by step. So this year's Christmas, family Christmas, and next year Christmas, it will be fine. You will not be, you will not have to explain.
No. I think now they're good. They're good, and they're very proud.
Yeah, they're on board with you. And what was you lived in the US, you moved around in Europe. What was the most like revelational moment when you realized, okay, wow, this is crazy. I'm biased as well, but hey, this is like this is changing, and like let's just embrace it. Was it like this topic, the fertility topic, or maybe something else, where you said like, okay, well, this is like I have to change my mind completely? Or...
I think before there's so many things, right? I'm still kind of there. I had these moments where I saw like man kissing, and I was like, okay, this is triggering me a little bit in my head, but like, why is this? Because I was raised at saying that this is wrong, but and then realizing, wow, this is bullshit, because it's beautiful, it's love, and it's nice. But for me, of course, like this fertility topic is, or like family forming topic is, like where it becomes so obvious, because then it's like, do you really believe that same-sex couples should have a child? Do you really believe that people should be married before they have kids? Like, where does all this come from? What is marriage? Marriage. And it's like all these beliefs, like very old Christian, I mean, you can believe in whatever you want, but it's like, why limiting like other people for, you know, like thinking about marriage. It's also a thing, like 50% of marriage in Europe fail.
And only still, 50.
maybe it depends probably on the country, but just saying, and the children are still very fine and happy and okay. And so I think that's, there's so many things that we need to clean up. But I think, yeah, for this fertility, I always say, like when I also talk to companies about fertility benefits, I always say, like, when you talk about this, you also see the soul of a company, because of course everyone wants to be diverse and inclusive, but it's like suddenly when they have to think about, okay, how do I pitch this to my management and like what will they think? This is like when you realize what they really believe in. Are they scared, or do they actually believe that this should be the same for everyone?
And they have to make it their own pitch as well.
Like, exactly.
They really want to sell it. Yeah, I heard a story about the DAX company that wanted to attract IT talent and more diverse talent, but they worked with a creative agency where my friend works, and they would really not make the website in English. Wow. It was just in German, like in very complicated, very formal German. And the agency would tell them, like, this is not the way. Like,
right.
If you want, like, techies, it's international. It has to be, like...
Yeah, but it's, like, also, like, in a way, it's okay, right? If this is your DNA, I mean, you can't change... Exactly, it's, like, it's societal change. And this doesn't change overnight. It's, like, it probably needs a new generation. It probably needs, like, new, slow... change, and it's also okay. And I think I had to accept this is super annoying being a startup founder, because like speed is like usually the one thing that you can influence, but you know, and this on this topic not so much.
Yeah, maybe like two questions regarding your startup. Why the rebrand? Why is it April now? Is it because of spring and like the new beginning?
We started a company. It was still called Oviavo, and Oviavo came from like we were like a B2C egg freezing business for women. So we thought ovaries kind of make sense. Mm. Oviavo, kind of that's where the name came from. But then when we did the pivot to B2B and realized, okay, it's not only for women, but it's also for men, it's for everyone. How can we make this term more inclusive? We knew we wanted to change it anyway. Also, Oviavo, no one was able to kind of really say it correctly. Like even the like people in the company was like Ovavio. Like English speaking people couldn't really. And so really we brainstormed kind of a lot around with the team, a lot around like allyship. How can we kind of make this more inclusive? And then we had three names, and April was one of them. And we registered three because, you know, like you can, you never know, like you have this six month time period where people can still file a kind of claim. And in this time period, we kind of tested it with a few people, and April was the one that most people remembered and were like comfortable with. And of course, it's like now April is like spring, and it fits like to our, like, you know, it's a new beginning,
blossoming.
New transition. Yeah, kind of like something is growing. Family building. It was like just like a really nice match.
That's really cool. And then the second question, I guess, since you are in this space, and so there are like fertility benefits for like B2B, B2C companies. So what else, what other like revolutionary, like groundbreaking business models or startups could you envision in that space to help to drive it forward? Is it like regulation? I can give you an example. It sounds a bit harsh maybe, but for me, so I have one child, as you know, I would probably have another one if there was like an artificial uterus, like somewhere. Yeah, it sounds a bit matrix, but I just don't see myself like juggling all the projects, all the professional projects I run, and another pregnancy. Well, pregnancy was okay, but more like the first year with like giving birth, which was horrible, breastfeeding. So if I could outsource that, like, and I know that in the Netherlands, they already have artificial uterus for the babies who are born too early. So they are starting with that. So it doesn't have to be a clone, but it can happen outside of my body, for example, in the lab environment. So I would totally invest in something like that in 10 years for the future generations.
Yeah. And to be honest, I think I also believe that this is going to happen. I don't think this will happen very soon. And this goes back to
regulation.
Not only regulation, but this is more society and our belief system and our values. And I think you will have a lot of enemies on that topic, because like it's still childbearing is kind of something, it's emotional. It's also a lot of studies, you know, that support that, you know, child needs that human connection in the beginning, and it has a lot of good good things. And I think there needs to be a lot of probably technologies that kind of can make sure that
produce that hormones
produce and... that exactly that, that feeling of safety and so on. But I think in general, I wouldn't go so far. So I don't have a child.
I just don't have a child just yet.
That's why I cannot judge this. But I can also, I was always scared of like, you know, giving birth because I feel like it's a crazy process. Mm. Like, who came up with this? I was like, why can't we just like, yeah, you know,
not women?
like a duck, just, you know, have an egg or something outside and it that grows outside. Cool. Yeah. It's pretty much what you're just saying. But I think for what was crazy for me in the beginning when we started this business is like we there was this one professor from I think Berkeley, but he was Austrian, and he said he was also one of the inventors of the pill. He said like, okay, the pill was the first revelation for a woman, and now egg freezing is the second one. And he believes actually that in 50 years, everyone will kind of like children will be produced through IVF treatments and kind of frozen sperm and eggs. Like, and sex is kind of only for pleasure, which is it anyway right now for 99% of the times. Yeah. It's for pleasure. And because a lot of people still say like, oh, I don't know, like IVF or in vitro fertilization, mm, why this is like sounds so unnatural. Why should I do this? A child should be born with love and kind of by loving each other. And then I'm not sure like how you experience this, but when I talk to friends that want to get pregnant, sex is not fun anymore. And it has nothing to do with love. It's like a timed
calendar
invite. And kind of like, no matter if you're sick or not, like you have to perform. And it's like not really enjoyable anymore. And so I don't know. I actually support this.
I think the scientific approach. Yeah, and there are, you can eliminate like certain genetic diseases, for example. And I mean, they already do it. And not in Germany, but in other countries.
A lot of people, when you talk about like genetic diseases, you kind of, there's a very thin line between like what is too far.
The brave and,
like,
new world. And,
exactly. Yeah. Do you want to really only get like the best DNA and kind of make sure like, and you can choose the, you know, is it a boy or a girl and like what color of the eyes and so on and hair and so on. And I think this is a very thin line. But I think if we do put a good regulatory process in place to say like, what is it that we actually want to support as a society and what not, I think that's really good. And even today, I mean, there are ways to kind of eliminate certain diseases, but it's usually for very heavy ones. But I think there should be more room to kind of explore this for sure.
So it's okay. So if I hear you right, it's starting with beliefs and with the cultural norms of our society and then going back to regulations and all the tech.
Because you cannot overwhelm a society with this crazy change. Mm. I think you need to show that there's good in what like technology can do, and especially medical technology. And if you show this over time, I think people will also be more open to this.
Since storytelling again and evangelizing. Exactly. Yeah, this is like super fascinating. Maybe a wrapping up for our listeners who are aspiring business angels and entrepreneurs. What is the advice you would give them? How to start? How to get into the ecosystem? Like starting to, how can they start supporting other female founders, or how they could become founder themselves, how could they find their calling and crunch the problem, which is not always the problem like you were confronted with. It could be something like completely new, like it was your case, right? From fintech to it's not fintech, how do you call it?
It's fintech, health tech, B2B SaaS sometimes as well.
Yeah, on the intersection of...
But I think in the end, it's all about like, it's networking, right? I mean, I started like...
Oh, you are the queen, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just talking to people. That's kind of what helped for me, because I had no clue how to do this. And I just like reached out to a few people and said like, look, I have this like cool idea. What do you think? And like in the beginning, people were like, yeah, it's nice, but no, that's not going to work. And I think I needed this feedback a lot and kind of this. But at the same time, also like talking to people, then they make you, they say like, have you met this and this person? You should talk. And then you talk to this person and then you talk to this person. And it's like, it keeps going. And at some point, someone says like, I think this is really great. I think I want to support this. And I think getting angel investors on board is like almost a little bit the easier thing if you're good at storytelling. Because I think angel investors always want to fall in love with a person. And if you manage this, I think this is your entry your entry point into the world.
It's like idea found of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think for angel investing on the other side, I think that's a little bit harder because in the beginning you don't really understand how this works and what the implications are. And that's why my way was through the syndicate. Because like
which one did you go with?
It was like from the Atlantic. Back then from Max Bader.
Okay.
Who's now like he founded a proper fund, so to say. But back then it was more like a syndicate, and it was easier for me because I trusted that person. You need to find that person that you trust.
And you
that
follow.
That is managing everything. But I felt like here through that it's like I understand how it works. I can just like, you know, transfer some money somewhere, and then suddenly like I get these like feedbacks and kind of how it works and kind of what I should expect, you know, sign some papers. And that was like the easier way in the beginning.
So join the syndicates. Yeah, we've had, I think, like 17 episodes so far, if I'm not mistaken, and from almost all European countries, really different territories, from Southern Europe to like Germany. We will have Nordic countries, France. We had a business angel from Italy, and they all name drop different syndicates or angel collectives or groups you can join with like small tickets or even like without, just giving back your time and supporting founders. So yeah, if you're really into it, just dig into the like previous episodes and or just read the notes on like Spotify or Apple. Well, Jenny, it's been great having you here. Like, it's a very inspiring journey, and we'll be cheering from the sidelines and for your success, and we'll see where it takes you.
Thank you so much. Also, thanks for having me here. It's a pleasure, and I also really enjoy listening to your podcast. That's why I'm really happy to be here as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.